It's 10 o'clock. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM Pacifica Radio in Houston. Stay tuned for Arab Voices. Good evening and welcome to the Arab Voices on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston, and kpft.org on the World Wide Web. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host Mark. Our guest tonight will be Ramzi Baroud, a Palestinian-American journalist and editor-in-chief of Palestine Chronicle online newspaper. We will discuss with him the latest developments in the Middle East. We will also take your calls live, so please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. But first, let's update you on some activities and events.
The Arab American Cultural and Community Center is holding a Labor Day picnic this Sunday, August 31st, from 3 p.m. to 10 p.m. This is expected to be a fun day for the whole family. It will include food, an indoor bazaar, live Arabic music, children's events, and a sports tournament. This picnic will be held at the ACC Center, located at 10555 Stancliffe Road. For more information, contact the ACC at 832-351-3366. And also, the ACC is offering a variety of free health screenings to the Houston community at large. The ACC Medical Clinic is open Sundays from 2 till 4 p.m., and there are going to be different doctors with different expertise providing service free of charge. This coming Sunday, August 24th, Dr. Samir Tuma will be at the clinic screening for hypertension and diabetes. To make an appointment or for more information, call the ACC, and that number again is 832-351-3366.
Michael T. Shelby, the United States Attorney for the Southern District, and Abe Martinez, Deputy Chief for the National Security Division, have requested from the Arab American Cultural and Community Center to meet members of the Arab American community to discuss various issues. ACC is urging everybody to attend and invite their friends, as this will be an important opportunity to interact with the United States Attorney's Office and express the community's concerns. This meeting will be held next Wednesday, September 3rd, at 7 p.m. at the ACC, located on 10555 Stancliffe Road. For more information, please call the ACC at 832-351-3366.
The first comprehensive exhibition in the United States devoted to the contemporary art of Palestine is on display in Houston. Made in Palestine is a survey of work by Palestinian artists living in the West Bank, Gaza, Syria, Jordan, and the United States. These artists, representing two generations of modernists and postmodernists, work in a multiplicity of techniques and mediums, including painting, sculpture, video, performance, textiles, ceramics, and photography. This art exhibition is displayed at the Station Museum, located at 1502 Alabama, and will last there through October. For more information, call the Station Museum at 713-529-6900.
The Houston chapter of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee will hold a general meeting in Mixer on September 5th. The featured topic of discussion will be Patriot Acts 1 and 2, What You Can Do. You will also learn more about the local chapter activities, its efforts, and how you can get involved. This meeting will be held at the Ziggy's Healthy Grill, located at 2202 West Alabama, on Friday, September 5th at 6:30 p.m. For more information, visit adchouston.org or call 713-532-4232. This event is free and open to the public.
A Palestinian film festival will be held on September 5th through the 7th in Dallas at the SMU campus. It will be showing 18 Palestinian films and hosting two filmmakers, Tom Hayes, the producer of People and the Land, and Rachel Leah Jones, the producer of 500 Dunam and On the Moon, will present both of their films. This film festival is sponsored by Al Hawda and Sustain. For more information, visit their website www.unitedforpnj.org.
World-renowned Arabic musician Samoun Shaheen is coming to Houston for one-of-a-kind music performance. The music ranges from traditional Arabic to jazz and classical styles. The concert will take place on October 4th at 7:30 p.m. at the University of Houston Cullen Performance Hall. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit adchouston.org or call 713-532-4232.
The Arab American Cultural and Community Center will hold its 8th annual Friendship and Unity Gala on Saturday, October 18th. This gala will be held at the J.W. Marriott Hotel in the Galleria area. This year's honorees include Ralph Nader, Mayor Lee Brown, and Bassem Barozzi. For more information about this gala or to reserve a seat, please call the Arab American Cultural and Community Center at 832-351-3366. And now with these latest news headlines with Saeed.
Israeli warplanes supplied by the United States carried out an assassination attempt against Palestinian activists yesterday. Five missiles were fired by the Israeli military helicopters, killing a 70-year-old Palestinian man and wounding at least 26 others in a densely populated neighborhood north of Gaza. Israel, over the past few days, has killed at least seven Palestinians in Gaza and wounded dozens others in a number of warplanes raids in different parts of the city targeting Palestinian activists. On Sunday night, Israeli military helicopters extrajudicially executed four Palestinians in a raid on their car at the coastal road just south of Gaza City. Last Thursday, the Israeli warplanes assassinated a top leader in Hamas, Ismail Abu Shanab, and wounded many more. Since the outbreak of the current Palestinian uprising against the illegal military occupation of their country, over 240 Palestinians were extrajudicially executed by the Israeli occupying forces, 70 of whom were bystanders.
Prominent Israeli peace activist Uri Avneri expressed his fear a couple of days ago of the further deterioration of conditions in the occupied Palestinian territories in the shadow of Israeli intentions to keep its assassination policy. Avneri was quoted as saying that a new cycle of bloody confrontations is likely to break out, harsher than prior to the unilateral Palestinian declaration of the ceasefire, as the Israeli army has recently acted without restraints. Avneri stressed that Ariel Sharon has been seeking from the very beginning a breakdown of Palestinian Prime Minister's government, as well as the Roadmap Peace Plan, and as such, developments have hampered his plans to annex more West Bank territories to Israel and turning the Palestinian areas into cantons.
The Israeli occupation forces shot dead today a Palestinian civilian in the West Bank city of Bethlehem while he was walking near a local mosque. In the West Bank city of Nablus, Israeli occupation troops blew up the house of Palestinian civilian Khaled Sabar and kidnapped five Palestinians from the house and took them to unknown location. Four other civilians from Nablus city were also kidnapped from the village of Kfar Qalil. Seven other Palestinians were also kidnapped from Jenin today by the Israeli occupation forces. And on Monday, the Israeli forces shot and wounded an 11-year-old Palestinian girl, Maryam Laham, in the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis.
U.S. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice said on Monday that if Israel wants to see a peaceful change in the region, it should fulfill its obligations towards peace. Rice said, quote, "Despite the horrific events in recent days, we have seen progress towards peace for Israelis and Palestinians," close quote. She said that Israel should fulfill its responsibilities to help achieve a peaceful change in the region, making clear that it is in Israel's interest for Palestinians to govern themselves in a state that is viable, peaceful, democratic, and committed to fighting terror.
The Israeli occupying authorities handed over on Sunday confiscation orders to Palestinian landowners in the town of Baqa' al-Sharqiyya near the city of Tul Kerem. Palestinian farmers in the town said they received orders of forcible confiscation of 300,000 square meters of the town's arable lands and converted it into a closed military zone. The mayor of Baqa' al-Sharqiyya said that the seizing of these lands represents an Israeli oppressive measure to increase the burden and hardships of the Palestinians in this town, pointing out that the town has been a constant target of the Israeli occupation's arbitrary measures and inhumane actions. The mayor pointed out that the seized lands are all planted with fruitful olive trees and form the sole source of income for many of the town's families, and by losing these lands, their suffering will double and would eventually force them to leave the town, which is exactly what the occupation looks forward to. Meanwhile, in the town of Abu Dis, near the occupied holy city of Jerusalem, Israeli bulldozers raised 45,000 square meters for the sake of building the apartheid wall.
In what should be described as pure state terrorism, the Israeli occupation forces demolished the entire commercial area of Nazlat Isa in the West Bank. 15 Israeli bulldozers entered the area and demolished over 100 shops and 5 homes. The bulldozers began the demolitions early in the morning and continued unabated until the late hours of the night. Israel destroyed the commercial area to build an apartheid wall on Palestinian land. The demolition of the 100 shops and 5 houses was a surprise to the shop owners, who knew nothing about this in advance. Some of them were able to save their belongings, but others were not. In late January of this year, Israel demolished 82 shops in the same commercial area. At that time, the demolition received worldwide media attention and condemnation, but the demolition of the 100 shops a couple of days ago was not reported by the major media networks.
At least 3 American soldiers were killed in Iraq today in separate attacks, In one incident, a U.S. soldier was killed and three were injured in a roadside bombing in the city of Fallujah. And a second U.S. soldier was killed in an attack on a military convoy in Baghdad. Since the beginning of the war in Iraq and the U.S. occupation of the country, about 280 U.S. soldiers have been killed and many more were injured. In addition, and according to IraqBodyCount.org, about 7,830 Iraqi civilians have been reported killed.
The top U.S. civil administrator in Iraq, Paul Bremer, told a reporter in the Washington Post that Iraq will need, quote, several tens of billions of dollars, close quote, from overseas in the next year to rebuild its infrastructure and revive its economy, and American taxpayers and foreign governments will be asked to contribute substantial sums. Bremer said the nation's electrical demand alone would cost $2 billion, while a national system to deliver clean water would cost around $16 billion over a period of 4 years. The U.S. government has already spent $4 billion every month on military operations in Iraq.
Finally, Al-Azhar al-Sharif, Islam's most revered authority, issued a fatwa banning Arab states from dealing with the Iraqi Governing Council, saying the U.S. picked-up body is illegitimate. The fatwa reads, quote, "The council lacks religious and secular legitimacy as it had been imposed on the Iraqis under the power of the occupation and does not conform to Islam's established principle of shura or counseling," unquote. The fatwa called on Arab or Islamic states not to back the interim body whose 25 members were selected by the U.S. occupation forces in Iraq. We will take a short break now, and when we come back, we will talk with Ramzi Baroud, a Palestinian-American journalist and editor-in-chief of Palestine Chronicle online newspaper. We will discuss with him the latest developments in the Middle East, and we will also take your calls live. So please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT.
For those who believe in humanity, for those who believe in liberty, and those that still have some sanity. It's a message of truth from a starting point to infinity. An innocent child is calling. Yes, he is calling. Cries of agony. The world's still watching. Strangers raped his land, destroyed his home, soil, and sand, burned his house along with the green so flowers can't grow. The Ardikia Palestine. An innocent child is calling. Yes, he is calling. Cries of agony from Ard Palestine. ولكن, whereas we will never surrender, revolution of truth is our aim. The stone that I throw holds my name. For this, Ya Habibati of Palestine, you'll be free from all this shame. This evil filth that occupies my sacred land has come to an end. Look how frightened they are. Just look how frightened they are. And how we're filled with rage. Imagine what they fear. What they fear is the truth, the heart, the soul that we hold. Ya Habibati of Palestine, your roses will grow again. والقدس لنا. Its soil have spoke. Yes, the soil have spoken the words of God up above. It'll be free, for the time has come. Behold my innocent child. Behold my innocent child. The stone that holds my name heard you cry.
Welcome back to the Arab Voices on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston, and kpft.org on the World Wide Web. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host Mark. With us now live over the phone is Ramzi Baroud, who's a Palestinian-American journalist and editor-in-chief of the Palestine Chronicle online newspaper. His articles are published and quoted in newspapers around the world, including the Washington Post, the International Herald Tribune, and the Guardian, among others. He is the editor of the anthology Searching Jenin, Eyewitness Accounts of the Israeli Invasion. Baroud is also a researcher for the Qatar-based Al Jazeera Net English. Ramzi Baroud received the Excellence in Journalism Award from the U.S. National Arab and Muslim Journalist Association in 2002. Ramzi, welcome again to the Arab Voices.
Thank you for having me, Saeed. It's always an honor.
Thank you very much. And obviously, we're going to ask you for your opinion on the latest developments in the Middle East, especially the escalations in the occupied Palestinian territories where the Israeli government is using Apache helicopters, a gift from the United States, to attack Palestinian civilians and what they claim as military targets throughout the Gaza Strip, killing and injuring dozens of Palestinians.
Of course, Saeed, what is happening right now in the occupied territories was expected. After the signing of the Hudna, or the ceasefire agreement between Palestinian factions, Israel tried to distance itself from that agreement, saying that it's not obligated to abide by an agreement that is signed among Palestinians. Of course, Israel should have celebrated that agreement if the idea was, in fact, preserving the lives of the Israeli citizens. But it didn't, and it allowed itself to attack Palestinians constantly since June 29th, which is the day of the signing of the ceasefire or the Hudna. According to Palestinian statistics or some Palestinian studies, 856 times have Israel violated the Hudna or the ceasefire, 856 times. That also resulted in the death of 15 Palestinians, the wounding of scores. Of course, none of that was of any relevance as far as the American media and top officials in the U.S. and in Europe were concerned. Palestinians retaliated, and I wrote about it personally in an article that was published by the Japan Times titled "Middle East Violence is a Forecast." No one but a naive did not, in fact, know that Palestinians would sooner or later retaliate. In fact, my argument was I was really surprised that the retaliation did not come any sooner. That doesn't, of course, condone the killing of innocent people on any side. However, to pretend that Palestinians will just sit in the corner and just expect to receive a blow after blow from the Israeli army and not retaliate, that is also a naive thing to do. As a result, Palestinians retaliated, and again, history starts whenever Palestinians retaliate. History is of no relevance before that. It only starts when Palestinians retaliate, and we saw the international uproar that was created by the suicide bombing in Jerusalem that killed 21 Israelis. Very few people made any relations or any links between the suicide bombings and the Israeli provocations prior to that bombing. And I'm not only talking provocations in terms of killing and wounding, but also seizure of land, home demolitions, confiscation of land that was joint, added to settlements expansion, and all of that, in addition to the fact that several Knesset members were threatening that they are going to force their way into Al-Aqsa Mosque and all these. So no respect to whatever Palestinians hold holy or dear to them. As a result, Palestinians retaliated, and again, the cycle of violence has started again. But unfortunately, according to the Washington Post and the New York Times and many others, the Palestinian suicide bombing has actually ended a period of calm. I don't understand where these people get their information from. If the lives of 15 Palestinians don't count, that's something different. But to claim that what happened before the suicide bombings, that month and a half of Israeli violence, exclusive Israeli violence, was calm, I think it was unfair. And we are just seeing a renewal of that violence that started by Israel, and it continues to be led by Israel.
Ramzi, what do you make of the targeting of Abu Shanab? It seems that he was, on the surface, a fairly soft target because he was visible and not as protected as some others. And also, he was, as far as I can tell, the only senior leader in Hamas who had publicly accepted the idea of Israel and a two-state solution.
Not only that, Abu Shanab is in fact one of the biggest fans of the ceasefire. At the time that several members of Hamas leadership were talking about the dismissal of the ceasefire, of the Hudna, and returning to the resistance activities, Abu Shanab was saying, wait a minute, we are giving Ariel Sharon the bullet that he needs in order for him to spark a civil war. And we should be very wary of this. So the assassination of Abu Shanab was not really a coincidence. He was not just another Hamas militant and just the idea is to just punish Hamas for the suicide bombing. That was not the case. The idea was to silence a voice that could actually put Israel in the corner. What Sharon was trying to do in the first place was to assassinate not only Palestinian leaders but the ceasefire agreement itself. In order for him to do that, he had to assassinate the engineer of the ceasefire agreement. Abu Shanab was one of the leading members of Hamas who met with the Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen, and together orchestrated the ceasefire and reached that agreement. And he promoted the continuation of that agreement even after the Israeli provocations in order for Israel, for Ariel Sharon in particular, to eliminate that aspect of Hamas policies. They had to kill the man who was leading the ceasefire. He is described as one of the most moderate members of Hamas, and that choice was in fact very important for Israel. It was not random, and as a result, even the moderates within Hamas themselves have been farther, radicalized. And very few people are going to leave the same legacy that Abu Shanab have led because, as a result of this.
What about the Palestinian president's comments today when he said that if Israel stops the assassination attempts against the Palestinians, then he would, or the Palestinian National Authority, would do what it can to stop Hamas and other Palestinian factions from attacking Israel? What do you think that will lead to civil war?
I don't think it will. I think Yasser Arafat is very aware of the extent in which a harsh crackdown on the Palestinian opposition would lead to. He is fully aware of the recent polls conducted by Birzeit University and other polling centers in the West Bank, and he knows the extent in which Hamas and the Islamic Jihad and the other popular resistance movements in Palestine have gained in the last few years. As a result, he knows that a cracking down on Hamas at a time that Israel continues to violate the roadmap, at a time that Israel continues to target Palestinians, assassinate civilians and otherwise, there is no way on earth he will be able to silence the resistance in Palestine. I think Arafat's message was really what was meant to the international community more than it was meant for Palestinians. It was conducted with Reuters, and it was published in English first, and then it was translated into Arabic. And I think it was really he wanted to send the message. And the message was, listen, do not expect us to be able to successfully fight or eliminate the voices in the Palestinian society that is leading the resistance if you do not expect Israel to stop assassinations. And Arafat knows very well that Israel is not going to stop assassinations. In fact, the Israeli Foreign Minister Ariel Sharon himself spoke about the fact that they are going to continue with their assassination campaign. In fact, the Deputy Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Olmert, today said it was a very successful operation killing Abu Shanab. However, we cannot stop until we eliminate every member of the Hamas people's leadership. That's his quote. Arafat knows that very well. He must have read that interview with Olmert. And as a result, he wanted to send a message, that's my personal belief, that I will not be able to do anything. My hands are tied as long as Israel continues with its violent policies, militant policies, assassinations of Palestinians. Nothing can be done before Israel stops its provocations against Palestinians. And I think that makes sense. I think it's a successful political strategy, but I really don't think that he was at all hinting at the possibility of seriously cracking down on the resistance movement anytime soon.
The U.S. administration immediately dismissed his comments, and they stepped up pressure on the Palestinian people. And even President George Bush yesterday, he sounded as if he was backtracking on his promise, his promised vision of a two-state solution of the Palestinians, for the Palestinians by the year 2005. And he basically called even on other Arab countries to pressure the Palestinians to quell and stop their resistance to the Israeli occupation, completely ignoring the Israeli extrajudicial assassinations, completely ignoring the Israeli violations and killing and terror they are imposing on the Palestinian people. Is the U.S. in the game here, or is it completely still out of touch and continues to side with Israel?
Well, actually, the U.S. is in the game, but is in the game on Israel's side. By no means the United States is an honest broker in this process, and I think that's one of the worst factors that has contributed to the cycle of violence. If there was a third party, a strong third party, that is in fact just and even-handed, with a frame of reference such as UN resolutions, for example, that have never been implemented by Israel, if we really had that third party in the game, it would have contributed positively to the peace process. But we didn't. We had a party that is fueling the Israeli military, that's pumping billions of dollars into the Israeli army and the Israeli economy, and in fact is building Jewish settlements in the West Bank and Gaza, illegal settlements according to the Fourth Geneva Convention of 1949. That's the kind of the third party we have. The United States never been out of the game. It has always been in the game, but it has always been in the game on the wrong side. We were not really expecting the United States to be on the Palestinian side, but somewhere in the middle. That's what honest brokers do. The United States have never been an honest broker. As far as President Bush is concerned, President Bush made it very clear from day one that he has no interest not only of shifting the U.S. foreign policy regarding Israel and Palestine, but is in fact being one of the most biased presidents in the history of this country. One of the first actions that President Bush undertook when he first was inaugurated was in fact blocking a UN resolution that calls for the deployment of peacekeepers to stand guard between Israelis and Palestinians. He blocked that resolution under the assumption that this is a violation of Israel's sovereignty. Since that day on, President Bush have been leading a very, indeed, embarrassing style of foreign policy in the Middle East. His recent statements that got so many Palestinian officials cheering that perhaps there is some form of change here, when he described the apartheid wall that separates, not technically separates the West Bank from Israel. It, in fact, seized 10% of the remaining of the West Bank and gives it to Israel. He described that as a problem. So many analysts said perhaps there is some change here. Maybe we are going to see some form of pressure. Well, a few days after Bush made that statement in a meeting in the White House with Abu Mazen, he met with Sharon and he reversed that entirely. And he all that he said was, I just want to make sure that Palestinians understood that war in a positive way. So basically, he just wants to explain why that's okay for Israel to do. Since then, Bush has been giving somewhat mixed signals, but by no means taking any tangible actions that shows, as the president of the only superpower, he's really interested in playing a fair and a just role for his country in the Middle East. He has been playing a very destructive role, in fact, in this process.
I want to invite our listeners to call in and participate. If you have any questions for our guest, who is Ramzi Baroud, a Palestinian-American journalist and editor-in-chief of Palestine Chronicle online newspaper. That phone number is 713-526-5738. Again, it's 713-526-KPFT. Give us a call if you want to talk about the Middle East, and we'll take your call live on the air.
Ramzy, you mentioned earlier the UN and the proposition to send peacekeepers. What is the presence on the ground of the UN in the Palestinian and Israeli areas, if at all, and how do people in general feel, and if I can expand the question further, what's the Palestinian Authority's position regarding the UN in general?
The Palestinian Authority tries to, as much as possible, to win whomever party is involved in this conflict, including the United States, despite the clear bias that the United States exhibited regarding its role in the Middle East. The Palestinian Authority is not very harsh, not as critical and upfront in confronting the American bias. The same situation with the United Nations. If you've noticed in the recent days or recent weeks, perhaps, after Israel assassinated several members of the Palestinian resistance, including an activist in Hebron, then Abu Shanab, and the killings in Rafah and in Jabalia and all of that, we hardly hear from Kofi Annan. He's more interested in Liberia at this point. And of course, Liberia is an important issue, but it just really bothers me personally when you see Annan using all these explosive statements describing the horror he must have felt when a suicide bombing took place or takes place at a time that you don't hear him completely, at a time that Israel violates the roadmap or kills a Palestinian or several Palestinians. The kind of statements the United Nations use, the UN statements in this matter, if Israel is the violator, they would immediately say both parties would have to play their role and do all they could to reduce incitements and violence and all of that. But when there is a Palestinian retaliation, when there is a Palestinian attack, immediately Kofi Annan describes with horror and condemns the attacks led by Palestinians and calls the Palestinian Authority to suppress the resistance, etc. So we haven't, of course, seen anything tangible from the United Nations to begin with. But as far as the verbal condemnations, the verbal stances that the United Nations have been taken, they are not even-handed to begin with. The UN really is a rubber stamp as far as the peace quartet of the Middle East is concerned. The United States is the main player. The UN has always been put aside, cast aside. They are not playing an important role. Once in a while, we see the Palestinian Authority pushing for a more visible role by the United Nations, by the European Union, by Russia, by other players in this. But that hardly leads to any tangible results. The U.S. continues to dominate the political game of the Middle East. The U.N. is playing a very minor and an effective role, and as far as the verbal condemnations are concerned, or the verbal stances taken by Annan and others in the UN and the Security Council, it has been really biased. I wouldn't say anti-Palestinians, but I would say has not been efficient in its stances against the Israeli violations of the agreements and of the human rights and of international law altogether.
713-526-5738 is the number. 713-526-KPFT. Let's take our first caller, and that's Rod. Rod, you're on there.
Oh, how are you folks this evening?
Pretty good.
I have an interesting observation. I was sitting down reading a book here, and it seems to me that the Palestinian situation is similar to the India removal situation that we had here in the United States, where agreements were reached. They were breached by the American government, and such that you saw, as you know, that either the Indians were pushed further and further west, or the populations were reduced to an extent they were just primarily non-factors. Seems to me this is the case here in Palestine. Further, it was curious to me is that I've always felt that Israel was created as a management buffer to prevent the fomentation of nationalist groups to have safe access to the resources that are in the region. Now, of course, many people will use religion as a dominating factor in their quest for domination of a region, but we also know that religion has always been used as an excuse to have an excuse to engage in certain types of behavior, masking the real fact, which is, is economic. I mean, it seems to me that that's actually what's happening. I could be wrong, but that's what it seems to me. That's what it looks like to me. Are you there?
Yeah, we're here. Is a response from our guest, perhaps?
Thank you for the question. That's indeed a very important topic, especially the first topic, which is the issue of Native Americans and Palestinians, and that inherent struggle for freedom that both nations had. Luckily, I have a quote here from Theodore Roosevelt in his narrative, The Winning of the West, where Roosevelt spoke about the so-called spread of the English-speaking peoples over the world's wasted spaces. This is what Roosevelt said. He said, "The European settlers moved into an inhabited waste. The land is really owned by no one. The settlers oust no one from the land. The truth is, the Indians never had any real title to the soil." That really reminds me of Golda Meir in his in her infamous interview with the British Sunday Times, in the late 60s, when she said there was no such thing as Palestinians. It wasn't as though there was a Palestinian people in Palestine considering itself a Palestinian people, and we came and threw them out and took their country from them. They simply did not exist. I don't even know if Golda Meir even read Roosevelt's narrative, and I assure you that Roosevelt did not read Golda Meir's, because her statement was not out yet. But it's really interesting, that similarity between the racist mentality that both figures had of the originals, of the native populations. They admit that there has been some sort of conquering of land, but that was to civilize that land, to nourish that land, and the fact that others existed in that land, that doesn't count, because those others are not really worth mentioning, or not worth dealing with. That is the racist mentality that governed the action of both the settlers, or at least many aspects of settlers' life here in this country, and the perception that Zionists, early Zionists, and today's Zionists hold of Palestinians. And I think in many extents that relationship is true. However, I also think that Native Americans and Palestinians share a great deal. They don't necessarily have to share so much in terms of the perception that their enemies have held of them, but they also share a great deal in terms of their struggle, their insistence on their rights, the fact that they fought and they continue to fight in different levels, to different capacities, and they refuse to give up because they do truthfully believe that this is their land, this is their rights, and they do not intend on giving up anytime soon. So yes, the manifest destiny of the white man and Zionism of Israel clearly meet on so many points, and I think that this issue does in fact need further exploration. Regarding the issue of religion, Herzl, the founder of Zionism, himself was not he was an atheist. He declared himself as an atheist. The founders of Israel, they were seculars. They were not religious. The religion card was played here in order for Israel to win to its side. The Jewish population as a whole, and second, what we call today the Zionist Christians, those mostly brainwashed Americans who sincerely and honestly believe that Israel is destined to rule that area in the Middle East, to as far as the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians is concerned, that's of no relevance. They are awaiting of the day of Armageddon and all of that. And Israel plays very well, plays that card very well. In fact, an Israeli official described the Christian Zionists, who count to up to 70 million here in this country, as Israel's assets in the U.S. So the religion card is really played with the purpose of achieving two things. First, to win to their sides that part of the Christian population around the world, and as well the world Jewish communities. But on the other side, it's a really good way to dilute that conflict, to to dismiss the legal basis in which Palestinians have been fighting based upon their human rights, UN resolutions, four Geneva Convention. All of that kind of really is being set aside when the issue of religion comes to being, because the conversation would then become there's really nothing can be done about this from a legal point of view. This is a conflict between religions. People of different religions have been fighting. They have been fighting there for hundreds of years, and there is really nothing we can do about it. So winning parts of the American population and marginalizing the other side, the other part that really does not want to get involved in a religious mess, not knowing that the issue is not really a religious issue, an issue of human rights. Israel is a colonial country that is an extension of fascist Europe, took over a piece of land that was not theirs. They threw away the original populations, who now count up to 5 million Palestinian refugees around the world. They are refusing to grant those 5 million the right of return to their homeland. And it's so easy to come and say, this is all about religion, therefore there is nothing to do about it. We have to be very worried about this, very concerned when we are tackling the issue of religion. Yes, there is some religious roots to this, but any conflict in the world can somehow be traced back to religion. The predominant issue, the ultimate reason of the conflict is not a religious conflict. It's a regular struggle between a nation whose land has been confiscated and an occupier that refuses to admit even the simple existence of his enemy.
713-526-5738 is the number. 713-526-KPFT. Let's take another caller, and that's Steve. Steve, you're on there.
Okay, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay, my comments are going to be brief. I'm an American, and I live obviously here in America, and I did not hear where the lady who was talking, who the guest, where she's from, if she's from Palestine or Israel. So my comments are not based in any way on that. Number one, I want to say that as an American, I am really sick to death of hearing about this in the news each and every day. This is polluting our lives. It's filling our lives with hate. And hearing every day, when the world is so huge and there are millions of people dying in Africa, there's a terrorist problem in Russia, and so on and so forth, and we all know the world situation. Yet, for some reason, this tiny piece of the world occupies so much of our time, so much of our energy. I have no feelings about Jews or Palestinians and their religion. My comments are not based on religion. My comments are simply based on two peoples who are, believe it or not, just acting like a bunch of animals. There is no justification for Israelis shooting children, and there's no justification for Palestinians blowing up children. And there's no justification for that. Gandhi took over India. He didn't do any of that. And I am sick to death of this being on the news. I'm sick about it reading in the paper. And it's just a cycle of vengeance, hatred, and it's just terrible. It's terrible that our kids are growing up seeing this. It's terrible that children are being killed. And I don't think anybody has the right to kill any children. And just so you know, I think the Jews should get out of Palestine. Okay? That's what I think as an American. And I want to hear what her comment is. What would happen if America stopped doing anything over there? Because whether she knows it or not, here in America, there is a growing sentiment of sympathy for the Palestinian people instead of what they believe is the case, that everyone in America supports Israel. This is not the case. Okay, there is a growing sentiment and a growing anger about what Israel is doing to reporters, what they're doing to kids, so on and so forth. And my comments are going to remain brief. But I want to know what her view is. How about if we just get out? I think we ought to just stop funding Israel, stop doing anything over there, and let these people either take care of this themselves or stop pointing the finger at America and saying America needs to do more, America needs to do more, America needs to do more. And that's just not the case. They are going to have to stop. Both sides, they're going to have to pick a point and stop and say, enough is enough. And so my question is, what do you think about that comment, and what about America just getting out?
Thank you, Steve, for your call.
Thank you.
And by the way, our guest is Ramzi Baroud. He is a Palestinian-American journalist and editor-in-chief of Palestine Chronicle online newspaper.
And I had no idea that I come across as a female when it comes to my voice over the phone. So,
sorry.
In any case, thanks, Steve. I really appreciate your comments. It just really shows that you are concerned and you are passionate about this. The issue is, of course, it's very important to those who are living there. Now, why should it be important to Americans? Why can it be as relevant to Americans as the issue of Sierra Leone or the issue of Liberia, perhaps? And the question is simple. It's because it is the money that we pour into the Middle East that is really keeping that conflict going. It is the fact that we give Israel $3.5 billion of military aid alone. Every year. It's the fact that we are the ones who are building the illegal settlements that really kind of resembles the heart of that conflict. That's one of the reasons. The second issue here is, can you imagine, I mean, if it's so frustrating, even listening to the radio or to watching television and seeing the Middle East over and over and over again, if it's so difficult even listening or watching that, can you imagine how difficult it is for a Palestinian refugee who has been living this day in and day out for the last 50 years of his life? That's the other point. But the important issue here is the fact that that conflict sounds smaller than it is. But in reality, it symbolizes something bigger. It symbolizes the remaining of the colonial powers of the world. The Palestinian refugees, their problem resembles the oldest refugee problem in the world, and the only one that remains unresolved until today. Refugees leave their countries, whether Chechnya or Afghanistan or Iraq. They would come back a few months later, a few years later. Palestinians have been out. They have been denied that right to go back for 55 years. Of course, we do, as human beings, we have more responsibility toward any conflict in the world, whether that conflict is in the Middle East or whether it's in Colombia. It is just our nature as a human beings. However, when we are the one who is financing that conflict, then our moral responsibility becomes much greater. It's no longer the matter of choice, fighting for animal rights or fighting to save the whales or fighting for Palestinians. This is not about choices anymore, because we have been involved all along for many years, for decades. It is our money. If every bullet that kills the Palestinians, when I was a child in the Gaza Strip, I used to have the hobby of collecting empty bullet shells that the Israeli army used to shoot at our school. And that's really because of the lack of other hobbies, the impoverished refugee camp. Every bullet that I collected said, made in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is in the U.S., as we all know. How can the United States play a positive role in this conflict if the bullets being fired at Palestinians is made in America? The Apache is made in America. The settlements financed by America. The Israeli Knesset never passes a budget without sending its financial experts to Washington, D.C. to lobby and to get billions of dollars and to come back, without the loan guarantees, without all of that. So there is a saying that says, if you have nothing to say, say nothing. If you have nothing good to say, say nothing. If the United States really unable to play any positive role in this conflict, then they better not play anything at all and leave Palestinians continue with their resistance or lead whatever direction they wish to lead in fighting for their rights. Regarding the suicide bombings and the Israeli killing of children, as much as I personally abhor both killings, the comparison here is a little bit unfair. I mean, you are talking about an armed settler coming from Brooklyn. I mean, most of the Hebrew settlers in the West Bank coming from Brooklyn and New York, a group of settlers coming from Russia, coming from Europe, and settling in someone else's land, taking a farmer's land, kicking him out, shooting at him and his children while he's trying to harvest his olive trees, And if that farmer reaches the point of explosion that he cannot take it anymore and he blows himself up, of course, that's still wrong. That's still a violation of international law. But I cannot say that the firepower of the fourth strongest army in the world could be compared, at least on a moral level, to a Palestinian blowing himself up because he has seen his comrades fall beside him, seen his father being killed, sees his mother being beaten, sees all that happening to him, and he reaches that point of explosion. Now, what we need to do is we need to remove that circumstances that led to the Palestinian violence. How do we remove the circumstances that led to Palestinian violence in order for us to stop the Palestinian violence is by ending the Israeli occupation. How can we end the Israeli occupation while Israel is in violation of 72 UN resolutions is by removing that political umbrella that the United States is providing to Israel. Without that political support, the political, military, and perhaps moral support that the United States government, media, has invested in the Middle East, without all of that, Israel could have never been able to maintain its occupation of the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem for the last 30 years.
Let's not forget the Golan Heights as well.
Of course.
And we're going to take our last call from Dan. Dan, you're on there.
Hello. Your guest mentioned Teddy Roosevelt's position. I'd just like to add that the author Ayn Rand, author and philosopher Ayn Rand, took exactly the same position as Teddy Roosevelt. That is that the land in the United States was quote-unquote empty, and that there were no legitimate owners until the white settlers came. But that's an aside. Really what I want to comment on is the wall that Israel's building. It's a very powerful symbol. And what I don't understand is why it doesn't seem to be a powerful symbol to many other Americans and to the media in America. To me, it has an overwhelming association to the Warsaw Ghetto, to the wall that the Nazis built in the Warsaw Ghetto, and how ironic it is that the descendants of the victims of the Warsaw Ghetto should become the perpetrators of wall building in a Palestinian ghetto. And I'd like to hear what your guest thinks about that.
Okay, thank you, Dan, for your call.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan, for following up on the comparison we discussed, I think, as a result of Steve's question about the relationship.
Ramzi, to remind you, we have about 90 seconds left for the show.
I think you're right. Not only the issue of the apartheid wall that represents a legacy in which the Jewish people have suffered from at a certain point, but also many other indications that reflects how Israel, in fact, perpetrates the same legacy that the Jewish people have suffered from. And some people could explain that in psychological, from a psychological point of view by saying the victim sometimes carries out the kind of policies that his victimizer have carried out against him at a certain point. But my argument here, and I'm going to be very brief about it, is that this really indicates that Israel by no means represents the best interests of the Jewish people. Because when the Jewish people declared that never again after the Holocaust, that was not supposed to only include the Jewish people only, would include any other victim, and most importantly, would also mean that the Jewish people themselves would not victimize any other nation. I just hope that more Jews out there would try to understand that Israel does not stand for them, does not do justice to their history, and by no means does not respect the statement that never again, and I hope that they would.
Do you have any website you could give our listeners if they want more information on this or to be up to date with the latest news?
Well, they can always visit our website, palestinechronicle.com, but also the good news that in few days, I'm not going to tell you the secret right now when exactly, but Al Jazeera is going to have an English website. So please just stay tuned, and in a few days Al Jazeera will be out there, and I think that will help a great deal of